seen by the board outside, you know, it's only hours and like, what? Not that time, it's like, you know what I came for?
You mean I should stop trying, it doesn't really mean anymore.
That's good. That's how it starts.
Where are you from?
Hey, Mauritius?
Mauritius,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, wait, oh, no. You sound like you're from Suriname. Oh.
Ah, right.
Guyana, like West India.
Well, I do speak French.
I know. I know. That's not the same thing.
Yeah, right. No.
It's the accent.
Well, because we have a form of Creole in Mauritius as well.
Yeah, okay, that's good experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Where are you from?
Georgia.
All right, yeah. Yeah. Now I see why. Shall we start? No, we can't start. He's not here yet. Where is he? There's somebody who sits there all the time. Hey? Where is he?
He's coming.
Is he? All right. Right, I will start because I have to finish a bit from yesterday. So sorry about, I forgot to wear this yesterday. Hopefully people at the back did hear me. So at least I'm wearing it today. Okay, so this is where we were. Oh, it is so much better. I don't have to shout. So this is where we were yesterday. We looked at this already, so I'm not going to go through this again. So hopefully you're happy with this. So like I said, this algorithm is supposed to be, it's basically capturing what you would do if you were to, if you're doing a truth table enumeration. So that's the algorithm that actually does this. It's effectively constructing the truth table. And the thing to note about this, aside from the actual kind of pseudocode and how it works there, right, you'll see that it is recursive, right, is the fact that it's very inefficient, right? So its time complexity is pretty bad, so it's exponential. So as the number of symbols that you have lying around increases, it just gets worse and worse, right? Okay, so hopefully you're happy with this. And one thing I wanted to mention as well is this. So whenever we're working with, so actually we're going to use this today a bit in today's lecture, are these logical equivalences, which are quite useful. So two sentences are logically equivalent if and only if they're true in the same models. Basically, if you say, if we write it like this, using these three bars there for equivalence, if and only if A alpha entails beta and beta entails alpha, we can say that alpha and beta are actually equivalent. And what happens is that we can then work out these various laws, right, or these various equivalences. So some of them are pretty obvious. They're just like commutativity of conjunction and commutativity of disjunction, for instance. And you have associativity as well. And you also have other things such as this one, which is maybe a little bit less obvious at first sight, such that alpha implies beta is the same as negating both and moving them and changing their positions. Basically, you have not beta implies not alpha, so that's contraposition. And you have other things like this, so, right? So what this tells us, for instance, if you look at this one, is that you don't necessarily need to have implication as something which is primitive. You can actually define implication in terms of negation and disjunction. In fact, it's possible to not have disjunction, implication. You only need one connective to be able to express everything that you want in propositional logic, and that's just none or XO. Well, actually, you need none and negation, sorry. No, none is it by itself is enough, just one. So, but it's not very nice to do proof if you only had one connective. The proofs would be pretty tedious. And the other thing to look at are these ones, are like De Morgan's, for instance, right, which enables you to move negation inwards, so not A and B is in fact not A or not B. So we're going to use these, and you have this one, it's dual there. And also these ones, which are distributivity of conjunction over disjunction and disjunction over conjunction. And depending on which one we use, we end up with what's known as, we'll see this today in conjunctive normal form, which is this one, and this one is known as, in disjunctive normal form, which is this one. So this one's going to be important for us when we're looking at David Putnam DPLL method today. So we'll see this a bit. So just to be able to carry on further, we're going to look at some notions, two notions here. One's known as validity and the other is known as satisfiability. They're pretty straightforward. So a sentence is said to be valid if the models are basically your worlds in which you're looking at the truth value of particular sentences. So they could be assignment of, so if you're looking at propositional logic, it's just assignment of true and false to propositional symbols. So a sentence is valid if it is true in all models. So basically you cannot make it false. Yep. Oh yeah, you can do that as well. So that's for inference. Okay. Yeah, so an inference, any form of inference that you use has to be valid as well. Exactly, so but that, this is the more basic idea. So for instance, here you have modus ponens there. So if you have A and you have A implies B as two assumptions, then it follows that you can have B. So it's the same, it's exactly that. So inference, mode of inferences, like modus ponens, I don't know, you've seen modus ponens? Has to be valid. Basically, you cannot falsify it ever. So that's why you get basically valid inference rules. Yeah, so yeah, it's a good point. So for instance, if we go back to just this one, true is always, you can never make it false, obviously. A or not A, right? So I always use this example. So this is always true. So this is to be or not to be, right, by Shakespeare. So that's, it's a tautology, right? So really, it's not a question at all. So it's a valid sentence, also known as a tautology, by the way. So I should say that it's not on there. So it's something that cannot be falsified. A implies A, and this one is modus ponens there, like I just said, right? So if you have A implies B, and you know A is true, then this implies B, right? So these are always true sentences, right? And validity can be connected to the notion of inference, so through this idea. So this is what we're talking about, this implication, through the what's known as the deduction theorem. So a knowledge base is going to entail some sentence alpha, or some formula alpha, whatever, if and only if KB, the knowledge base implying that particular formula alpha, or implying alpha, is actually valid, right? So this is the idea. Here I'm writing it like this, but you could write KB, and then a bar alpha, right? So that's the other way of writing it. So this is it. And you can go the other way around as well. Anything that is valid, any implication that is valid, is actually entailed by the assumption of that particular implication, right? So these are two things. So this is validity. So validity means it's always true. But you also have this one, which is slightly weaker. It's the notion of satisfiability. A sentence is satisfiable if it is true in some model. So you can actually exhibit some kind, for instance, for propositional logic, you can exhibit an assignment of truth value to the particular sentence such that it is true. So if I have A or B, well, I can make it true by just making A true, for instance, right? Or making B true, or making both of them true. But they're not. It's not valid because if I take A as false and B as false, then it's false, right? And it's the same if I have just C. I just make C true, and so it is satisfiable, meaning I can find an assignment of true value such as this propositional symbol there is true, right? And a sentence is said to be unsatisfiable if it is true in no models, basically if it is not satisfiable. So for instance, this one can never be made to be true, A and not A, right? So this is always false. Right, and this is interesting. Satisfiability is connected to inference via this as well. So a knowledge base entails alpha if and only if the knowledge base and not alpha is unsatisfiable. Can anybody tell me what this is known as also? It's a proof by contradiction, right? Where you say, okay, if I want to prove that something follows from some base, some set of facts, for instance, I just assume it's negation and try and see whether I can deduce, whether I can get false out of it, right? So basically it's unsatisfiable, right? So remember, unsatisfiable means it's new in no model. So this is proof by contradiction, right? And we'll see that, you've seen resolution? Have you done resolution? Did you must have, didn't you do resolution last year?
Yes, we did.
Exactly, so didn't Do you remember how resolution works? So usually you have a set of sentences and you have a goal. You negate the goal. You don't remember, do you? Oh God. We do have one lecture on resolution. But resolution is a form where you look for unsatisfiability. You're trying to derive the empty clause, right? If you remember that. Or you're trying to derive false. So that's the idea. And it's not all completely random. That's the idea. So, you know, even though I'm pretty sure you don't remember, but now you will, right? Because now that I've given you this. Yeah, probably not. Okay. So yesterday I mentioned that when you look at proof methods, you have basically you can divide things into two main groups. One is known as two kinds. So one is basically the sort of inferential method where you are talking about proof theory, so which is the application of inference rules. So what do? You have a legitimate generation of new sentences from all, and you do this through the application of inference rules of some kind, right? So the proof then is a sequence of inference rules application. And you can use the inference rules basically as operators in some kind of standard search algorithm. So Bode-Sponheim, for instance, can be applied in a forward way, right? And you keep deducing new facts. Or you could apply it backwards and deduce and try and satisfy the assumption. We'll see this later, even if it's a bit abstract right now. But we'll see that. And typically, this requires transformation of sentences into some kind of normal form. Typically, and you do this so if you've seen resolution, you actually do have to turn things into normal form again. And it's this CNF, it's closal form, which we'll see again just soon. So that's resolution, for instance, right? And like I said, the other kind tends to be this model checking way of looking at things, right? So truth table enumeration is one of these, but it's always exponential. But there are much better methods, and we'll see one today. This is one which is called Davis-Putnam, Loggerman, Loveland, or DPLL method. It used to be known only as Davis-Putnam, and it just goes to show how influential the book is. Russell and Norvig, because they said, because apparently, so Davis-Putnam used to be the method, but Loggerman and Loveland also worked on this, not at the same time, a little bit later, I think. But anyway, and then, you know, they modified it a bit, and they said, you know, in the book that really, well, I don't know if they said that maybe in one of the editions, really is this what it should be called, and now everybody calls it DPLL. Funny, isn't it? And so model checking can be things such as Davis-Putnam for propositional logic, or it could also be some kind of heuristic search in some kind of model space. Hopefully this is sound again, right? Remember, we have soundness and completeness. We never want to remove soundness. We always want that. Completeness, we can't always have this. So we'll see an algorithm soon in the next coming lecture that is sound but is not complete because it has an element of randomness in it. And so this is the min conflict, such as hill climbing algorithms. So we'll see that now. So, yeah, I probably don't have to go through this. The thing to bear in mind are these things are quite important, right? And the Wumpus word is just an example that we use. But no, all of these are important, right? Syntax, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll leave that. And any questions? Yeah? All right, so no questions. So this means we can start today's lecture. 10 minutes late. Oh, anybody play StarCraft? Where is it? Somewhere in there. Yeah, that's the most important thing on the desktop there. Nothing else matters. These slides. Right, so we're going to look at effective proportional inference. So we're going to look at this DPLL method. So even though this says 7.5 to 7.7, I was just rechecking this. It's really more 7.6 and 7.7 here. Although, you know, 7.5, we'll look at this a little bit. It's to do with also there's some bit about resolution and all this. So, but anyway, it doesn't hurt to read all of this. Okay, so what are we going to have? We're going to look at two families of efficient algorithms for proportional inference, right? So one is this DPLL algorithm I just mentioned, right? And they have they both complete backtracking search algorithms. So, you know, meaning you can backtrack and, you know, things go wrong, you can actually make other choices. One is complete, right? So this one is a complete backtracking search algorithm. So I have to be careful. So this one is actually incomplete, which is a local search. So this bullet point is not very good, actually. Now that I look at it, it just had me confused. So this is for this. And this one is, yeah, so this should be a sub-bullet point, I think. Yes. Because if you look at it, it doesn't make sense to have this under this. So this one is an incomplete, it's a local search algorithm. And we'll see what it means by local search. And it's known as WalkSat. It's quite famous and it's quite good. So, okay. First thing first is to do with closal form. So you've seen this if you've done resolution before. So you need to get, like I said before, well, just a few slides ago, is that usually you need to get your, if you're talking about many of these automatic methods, you need to get your sentences or whatever you're trying to reason about, your sentences of first-order logic, into some kind of normal form, right? In this case, DPLL and Worksat manipulate formula which are in conjunctive normal form. So what does conjunctive normal form mean, right? So conjunctive normal form means basically, well, we'll see. So conjunctive normal form, is also known as CNF, right? So then what we're going to have is that the notion of a sentence is a formula whose satisfiability is to be determined. So remember, so we're trying to look for satisfiability, right? So one way of doing this is through model checking and looking for a truth table, but this one is not. This is a proof method, right? So, and so it's actually a decision procedure, this one. Do you know what a decision procedure is? So a decision procedure is a terminating algorithm that's basically going to finish telling you yes or no. It's definitely going to give you an answer. So that's why it's known as a decision procedure. So DPLL is a decision procedure. So it sounds incomplete, right? So the idea is that we're going to try and see whether a sentence is satisfiable, right? And the way we do this is we turn any sentence that we have that may have connectivity such as implication and if and only if into one that only involves negation and disjunction, well, and also implicitly an end there. So these are the only thing we're going to have. No more implication or if and only if, right? So we're going to have this conjunction of clauses, right? And what is a clause? A clause is a disjunction of literals. And what is a literal? A literal is a proposition, right? It's a propositional letter or its negation. So A or not A. Both A and not A are actually literals. So if you look at this, so one way we could write this, very often you see it written like this. The clauses are like this. So this is a clause there with the brackets, A, comma, not B. So this is effectively A or not B, right? But if the comma is outside the brackets, this is actually is an N, right? So this is B or not C. So each one of these there, that's a clause, that's another clause. But the two together form is the sentence whose satisfiability we're trying to determine, right? Okay, so this is quite important. So one error people make is they, you know, when, you know, you should always remember, if we're talking about a clause, this means between the literals you have an O, right? So this is A or not B, and each one of these is a separate clause there, okay? So that's why it's known as, so this is conjunctive normal form, meaning that you have a conjunction as the main connective between each of the formula that you have, or each of these sub-sentences there, right? Okay? So you can break there, but you don't break here, right? So you need to keep these together. Right, so we need to be able to do this. So this is where our particular, you remember the equivalences I showed you before come in handy. For instance, you know, I'm just going to take an example. If I have a particular sentence which is I started, which is like this, where I have this as a, in the sentence where I have if and only if, I need to get rid of this, right? So I need to turn into this conjunctive normal form. And it's quite important then to do things in a particular order, otherwise you may have an explosion in the size of the clause. You end up doing something, and if you do it in the wrong order, you end up having to redo the same thing over, and it doesn't quite work very nicely. And that's one of the common mistakes people make. Usually they get this one right, so you need to remove the if and only if first, right? So you get rid of that. And the way to do this is that you turn it into a two-way implication, right? So A alpha if and only if beta is basically alpha implies beta and beta implies alpha, right? So this is what we do with this one. We end up with two bits there, right? Now the next step is also easy. You remove the implication, right? So you remove the implication next, right? So that's the next step. So what does it mean to remove the implication? You replace alpha implies beta with not A or beta. You all happy with this so far? Okay, so this is what we do for this one. So you end up with not B11 or, so given that these are all O's, you don't really need to keep the bracket. But on this side, for this one, for this bit, obviously you need to keep the bracket because it's not P12 or P21, right? So this is what we end up with. Now the important thing is what people start doing wrongly usually is that they start doing this step before you do this step, and you don't want that. You want to push the negation in as much as you can using De Morgan's rules, right? And double negation. Let's see if we can find this again. Right, so De Morgan is this one. So for instance, you want to push in using that one as much as possible. Well, you have both of them. So you just want to get the negation as close as possible to the symbols. Remember, because you want to talk about literals, right? So you want to do this first before you do anything else. So here you go. So in this case, nothing to do. But in this case, we can push this in. So this becomes not P1, 2, and not P2, 1, right? So because you pushed it in, right? You just flipped the ought into an N, right? Only after you've done all this. So if you look at this already, right? So what can you tell me once you've done this step here? What is this? This one is already in closal form, right? You don't need to do anything about it because, you know, everything is an O in there. So this one, really, nothing's going to happen. The only one you're going to be working on is this one, right? So this means, like, you know, if you were doing this, this one would be a clause. You don't have to worry about it either. It's already in conjunctive normal form. But look at this one. Now you push. So the thing to remember is that's the way to do it. You push the O over the N because you want to get the O so that you have the clauses, right? So then you do this, right? So you have not P1, 2, OB, 1, 1, and you have not P2, 1, OB, 1, 1, and you're done, basically, right? Because now you have one clause, two clause, three clauses, and, right? So all of this, you cannot do anything further to this. It's in CNF now. Any questions? Happy with this? So thing to remember, this first, if and only if, implication, move negation in all time in, and then distribute this over this. If you do it in that order, you'll never get this wrong, right? And one thing you'll see, if you ever, you say you're in the exam or whatnot, and you're asked to convert, basically you're given something in first order logic with if and only if, etc., and you're asked to prove that it's satisfiability using DPLL or whatever, or even resolution, then this means you need to convert thing into CNF. And if you find that you're trying to do it and you've reached half a page and you still haven't finished, it's probably that you're not doing it right because, you know, it means that you probably missed a step or you did it in the wrong order. So use this as a hint, right? So because usually, you know, we're I'm not that bad in terms of making it like, because this is pretty tedious, right? It's just a question of understanding how to do this. And, you know, in real life, you probably would never do this on paper because these are machine inferences, right? These are things that are meant to be done by computer. Right? Anyway, you should remember this. So once we're in CNF, now we can actually talk about the DPLL algorithm, right? Which is going to be trying to show that, which is going to try and show that a particular sentence, so basically a set of clauses, right? So once we're in CNF, it's a set of clauses, a sentence in CNF is a set of clauses, is satisfiable. So by satisfiable means I'm going to find an assignment of true value to the various symbols such as the whole thing is true, right? That's the idea. It all looks cryptic. Really, that's all it's trying to do. It's trying to say, what can I make each of these symbols such that I have a true sentence? That's all it's trying to do, right? And you know how you can do this by a truth table because you can just write all the symbols and just do all the full table and then read it off, right? But in this case, we're going to try and do it slightly differently. And you can improve over truth table by the fact that you have this notion of early termination. We're going to see what this means. And you also have this pure symbol heuristic and unit clause heuristic. So these three things are the heuristics that are used by, even though it says early termination, it could have said early termination heuristic. But it's not really heuristic, this one, because you can tell immediately. But you have these three things that actually make it better than truth table enumeration. Okay? So what is early termination? Well, early termination is easy. So a clause, right? If you're looking at one of the individual clauses, A or B or whatever, is true if one of its literals is true, which should be obvious because a clause is just a disjunction, right? You just need one of them to be true to be done with this. So if A is true, then A or not B is true. This means if I'm doing something, I'm trying to show the satisfiability of a set of clauses. Once I've been able to show that one clause, one of the literals in there is true, I don't have to worry about this clause anymore, right? I can just get, it's true, so I'm done with it. So I can delete it, basically. I only have to look at the other clauses I still have to work with, right? So this enables me to basically, you know, if I have a clause which has 100 literal and I manage to find the 90th one is true, I don't have to look at the other 89, right? So I can basically stop looking at this clause immediately, which is an obvious thing, right? So, but that's one other thing. So the other thing is a sentence is false if any of its clauses is false, which would also be obvious because it's a conjunction of clauses, right? So if you remember, right, so if you look at this, each one of these is a clause and there's an N between each. If one of these is false, obviously there's no way I can make the whole sentence or the whole set of clauses true, right? So that's the other one. So they're both pretty obvious, right? So this is saying, you know, as soon as I find a clause that gets falsified, I can stop, right? The sentence is false if any of its clauses is false. So if A is false and B is true, for instance, if I have this, then A or not B is false. So sentence containing it is false. Okay? Happy with this? That's all there is to early termination. Two obvious things, right? What is the pure symbol heuristic? It's also fairly obvious, right? So a symbol is said to be pure, right? If it always appears with the same sign, with quotes there, right? Because there's no such thing as sign like minus negative, but we just use negation basically as the notion of a sign. So this is sometimes known as the polarity, right? So if it appears with the same polarity in all clauses, right? So let's clarify this with an example. So if we have three clauses like this, right? So I could have put an N in between these, right? So I'm being a bit sloppy because I'm using several kind of, you know, but hopefully it's clear. So we have three clauses, 1, 2, 3, right? And what can we say? We can actually say that A is pure because A is always appearing as positive in there. There's no negation in front of E. So look at this. It's A there and it's also A there, right? And C is also, and B is also pure because B only appears as not B, right? You don't have B anywhere. Right? But C itself is not pure or impure because you have not C and you have C. Right? So it appears with both with as a negated literal, negated and also positively. Right? So what do you do with these pure literals? Well, remember, we're trying to make these clauses true, right? As much as we can. Well, what can we do? It's easy because we can just make any pure symbol true. Well, yeah. No, make any literal containing a pure symbol true, because there's no way we can have its negation. So there's no way anywhere else it will appear false, right? So here what we do, we just say, well, we want to satisfy this clause. Well, we can just make A true. It's not going to be, by the fact that we make this true, it's not going to affect any other clauses in which these become false, right? Because we made a choice there. We make it true. It's not going to change anything else. What about not B? Well, we want to make this clause true, and we know not B is pure. Well, we make it not be true as well, so meaning we make B false, right? And then we can get rid of this, we can get rid of that. But we can't do that for C, because if we decide to make C true, we get rid of this, but this one is a problem, because it only becomes a not B. But maybe not B is not satisfiable, right? Maybe I can't make not B true, if you see what I mean. So it affects this one as well. That any choice that we make for this here affects this, this clause. Right, and it affects it in the other way because it's true in here and false in there. They can't both be the same at the same time, right? Do you follow? Are you happy with this? So really, we just want to make this true, and we can do this, no problem. So that's the pure symbol heuristic. Okay, so now another heuristic is known as the unit clause one. So the unit clause means that you only have one literal in the clause. So your clause is just A or just B. Well, what do we need to do to make it true? Well, it's easy. We just have to make it, well, we just assign true to it, right? So the only literal in a unit clause must be true. It's even simpler than the pure literal heuristic in this way, right? So if I only have one symbol, my clause is just one symbol or just one literal, it could be not A, actually. If it's only one literal, so here it's A, but it could have been like not B. That's also another unit clause, right? Then what I do, I just make my literal true again. So in this case, A must be true, right? So that's easy. And we also have this situation. If we have clauses where all but one literal is false, then we consider this to be also a unit clause, right? So for instance, if I have this, A, B, and C, and while I'm working on it, I find out that B and C are false, well, it's equivalent to just A, right? A, false, false, so A or false or false, that is A, so that's also a unit clause. We'll see an example with this. You happy with this? So pure literals, meaning they appear in only one polarity, so you can make all these literals, symbols appear in only one polarity, so you can make any literal that contains them true. And unit clause is simple. They just appear on their own, right? So with this, we can actually make life, we can actually look at the DPLL algorithm now, right? So what does it do? Well, it's going to try and show that a particular sentence in propositional logic is actually true or false. That's why it's a decision procedure. It's definitely going to return true or false for a sentence, right? So first you have your set of clauses. So it's just a set of clauses in CNF, which is a representation of S. So you convert things to CNF, and you keep the list of symbols that you have lying around because you're going to be doing assignments to them, right? And this is the model. So the model is going to be the assignment so far that you make, right? And so as you go through, right? So, okay, so you call your DPLL function there with the clauses, the symbols, and the model, which is initially empty because you haven't assigned anything. So if every clause in clauses is true, right, so that's a base case in the model, right? Basically, I've got an assignment of true value to P, Q, R, whatever, and it makes all the clauses true, then I return true, right? If some clause in clauses is false, given that particular model, then I return false, okay? So these are the base cases, right? Otherwise, what do? I try to find all the pure symbol. I try to find some pure symbol there, right? Let's find some pure symbol in the set of clauses based on the list of symbol that I have, right? If there is such a thing, I found one of these, right? Then I just call the DPLL algorithm here recursively, right? With the set of clauses, right? But I remove symbols because I've assigned it, and I give it the value that I found for it, right? So it's pure, and I found that either it has to be false or it has to be true in order to make the literal true, right? Containing it true, right? Because it could be P or not P, right? So I just push this. That's my new model there. It just enhanced, it just increased or extended with a new value for P, right? And that's all I do. So you call it recursively, and you keep going. If you don't have anything, you know, if there are no, you know, the next step is, you know, if you've done the pure symbol, then you can look at this one as well. You've tried to find whether there are unit clauses, right? So you found any unit clause, you found one, it's, you know, there. Basically, it's very similar. It's the same thing as here, right? You just call the thing recursively, the procedure recursively, and remove the symbol and give the value that you found for in order to make that particular unit clause true. Remember, it could be not A. To make not A true, the value that you have to give to A is false. What's that? Somebody, what? Oh my God. You are bored. Come on, you can't be that bored. How am I feeling? Yeah, it is boring. But anyway, look, what can we do? We have to do this. No, it's not. It's very interesting. So actually, I should say this. You may find it's boring, right? People are making a lot of money with this because it's using hardware for in hardware companies. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Come on. Don't tell me you all just want to go and work for the banks. People hate bankers these days. You all want to go and work. I don't know. Yes. Yes, we need some people to do some logic out there. Why are we wasting? Why am I doing this? Anyway, why are you here? Who's here? Who's here whose this course is purely optional? Hey, that's not bad. Let's see if you're still here in 3 weeks. Yeah, no, that's not bad actually. See, so this means you must like logic or some of this stuff, or maybe you have no other choice, that's why it is. Okay, let's not go any further into this. So, right, where was I? So, okay, so if you've done all of these, and you still haven't been able to prove that, you still haven't proved that it's true or false, what do? You don't have any more pure, symbols to look at or any unit clause. Then it's the usual bit. You have to do a K-split. So this is what this does. It says, okay, find the first symbol in the list, right? And keep the rest. And then what I'm going to do in one branch, I'm going to assign true to P. And in the other one, I'm going to assign false to P. So basically, you're going to try to show it. And you end up, you want to avoid as much as possible doing this. You want this as the last resort. Because then you end up basically having two of these now. But of course, there are ways of dealing with this. If one of these returns true before, you can just stop if the other one's still going on. But the other thing is, right, so this can become quite intelligent because here just saying return the first symbols of this, but there are all sorts of heuristics people have come even to pick what symbol to use there because hopefully there are ways of picking one that's going to help you finish earlier. Maybe, you know, for instance, what would be a good idea here maybe? Any idea? You might want to pick a symbol that occurs a lot, right? Because if you're assigned to it, hopefully you get rid of a lot of clauses or you may falsify something very quickly. So there are all sorts of heuristics people have got for this. So easy, right? So only these two things happening. If you can't do these and you still haven't been, you just do a K-split on the on one of the symbols that are still there, that is not in the model yet. Okay? So one thing that sometimes we do have, so I should mention this, is this tautology deletion step. So this is not essential. It is covered by the other heuristics, right? But sometimes it's included in the algorithm. If you hit something where a clause is effectively, you know, a tautology, so basically it's valid, right? It's always true, right? Like something like this, then it can be deleted. So that's just an extra heuristic people use from time to sometime. But even if you don't have this, you don't need this, really, strictly speaking, right? So the clause is bound to be true because either whether A is true or false, therefore it can be deleted. So that's another one, okay? Should be obvious. All right, so here's an example we have here. So let's assume we have something already in CNF like this, right? So each one of these is a clause, right? So remember, implicitly we have an OR between each one of these and an AND there, right? So, and this is the last step. We use the K-split if model not found by these heuristics. So if we use the heuristics, early termination, pure literal, and unit clause, and we still don't find one, we need to do a K-splitting. So let's do this. So if we look at this to start with, right? If we look at this, so actually I should have had the pure one. If I'm following the algorithm, I should look for pure symbols first. But nothing is pure to start with anyway, so it's okay. So then we do the unit clause heuristic, right? So we look at our list or at our set of clauses there. Which one are the unit clause? So that's a unit clause, that's a unit clause, that's a unit clause, right? So we want to make each of these unit clauses true. So how do we do this? Well, it's easy. We just make S21 true. We make S11 and S12 false, right? So these are the first three that we do. So what this is doing, remember, what we're trying to do is to find a model, right? So basically, we want to find assignment of true values to the symbols. So we've already got three of them taken care of there already, right? So these are all the symbols. We have only four of them. So basically, we only have to work to find one more, right? Hopefully. So what does the early termination heuristic do? I mean, what does it do next, right? So now we look at this particular clause, right? Early termination. Both of these are true. Why? Because S11 is false and not S11 is true. So we can get rid of this, right? So this means we can delete this one. So we're done with this one too. And this one is also SW22. So this one is also true because this is false there. So we can delete that one as well, right? And also we have that this one is also true because we have S21 is true in there. So we're done with that one as well, right? Not much left, basically. So no pure symbol. The only one left is, right now, is, which one is it? This one. Yeah. Actually, did I look at the wrong one? So that's deleted, that's deleted, that's deleted. That's the one left. So, but now what do we do? Well, we can do our unit clause heuristic again, right? S21, because once we've done this, is false, so it means that this is effectively a unit clause. Remember we said we had this, right? So if we have two things, we have two literals in a clause, but one of the literals is, or more than one, or all of them are false except for one, then we have a unit clause there as well. So basically this is the unit clause which is just W22, so it must be true. And once we're done, if you look at this very quickly, if I asked you to do this by truth table, it would take a while. Well, you have four symbols, you know, you have 2 to the 4, right? So you would have to do a truth table that big. But here's very quick. You found out the assignment of truth values to these particular symbols there, all four of them. That makes this whole set of clauses true. And I think it's pretty quick. It's quicker. I'm pretty sure if we had to anybody try and do this, once you're familiar with this and try and do the truth table, you'd get this one more quickly than the truth table, in all likelihood, hopefully. Yeah, you would. So that's one particular solution there. Any questions about this? Actually, I should know this. I'll find out and tell you. I forgot. I know. I was thinking about this while because I said somebody might ask me about this, given that I've mentioned the one about the truth table several times, and I keep forgetting. It's one of those. Yeah. Actually, we'll talk about this a little bit soon, because there are issues to do with. They're not all the same. It depends on the length of the particular clauses you're looking at as well, and the number of symbols. Hmm? Yeah. What do you mean?
The part where
this one.
If one of the literals is true, then the entire clause is true, right?
Yeah.
Well, how is it implemented in the algorithm?
You mean here?
Yeah.
It's not in there, is it? Oh yeah, no, but it's saying it's every clause. It keeps track of those that are true so far. It's implemented in the sense that every clause has to be true. If one clause is true, you just say, okay, it's true. You just take it and you keep it. It's this line that does this, right? So as soon as a clause is true, you don't need to look at it any further. I don't know. This is this line, right? This line saying every clause in clauses. No? Yes?
But on a smaller level, early termination also tells you that the whole clause is true as soon as one of the literals is true, right?
Yeah, that's right. So this. What it should do for each of the clause, check that it is true. That's what it is doing there. It just you know, this is it. It's just looking and saying, you know, if the clause is true, basically what you would do, you would keep, based on the model that you have so far, you have one way of keeping track of the clauses that are already true. You only look at the ones that are left, right? And each time you check, you would say, okay, I've looked at this one. These are already true, even if just one literal. As soon as one literal is true in one, you don't have to look at this clause any further, right? You just need to look at those that you couldn't make true. So I'm not sure whether this one, actually, I'm not sure. But that's the idea, right? Because it has to be every clause. So the early termination just tells you for one clause, right? Where is that? The early termination will tell you for this clause is true. So I don't need to worry about it anymore. I just need to look at those that are not true yet. But I need to remember that I saw it, that it is true. But only on one literal. Yeah, I think I sort of see what you mean. So this is the test for, yeah, okay. Where do you say that one clause is true? Is that the one that what you're asking? Yeah, it's hidden in there, isn't it? That's where it's hidden. It's hidden in that line there. Yeah. It's not saying, you know, check one particular clause. It's not working with... So if you look at this, this doesn't work with one clause at a time. It's, there's a loop there kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean. Because it could be inside there, right? But this is not telling you. This is just saying, fine. It's not doing the actual assignment. It's not doing the early termination itself. Just trying, find me a unit clause. It's here that you do the test. No, it's there. Yeah, it's not doing it explicitly, you're right. So I see what your point is. Because you would, the temptation would be to be like, this should be doing this, right? And reducing the number of clauses as well, basically. So the fine unit clause should be like, you know, it returns a set of clauses with those that are throughout already. Yeah. Yeah, so this one is keeping it a bit simpler and keeping the check in there. I don't know, do you guys follow what's going on? Because what's happening is that, where do you actually check for this early termination? It's not in there, right? It's actually there, in there. Yeah, but yeah, that's, I can imagine actually when you're implementing this, that people would think, okay, the fine unit clause is actually doing the early termination check as well. It doesn't. Really what it does in this algorithm is exactly just find it and then you deal with it in the big, in the bigger thing. Yeah, and it's the same with the pure as well. It doesn't delete anything from the clauses themselves. Yeah, it is more abstract, you're right. Good point. Where are we? Well, okay. Any other questions? So we'll just look at walksat, so which is the one which is sound. So we've seen one now. DPLL is sound and complete, right? And we've seen how it can work. And you can try this anytime. You should. Yeah, it's a past exam question anyway. So and walksat is incomplete, and it's a local search algorithm, and we'll see how it differs, right? You have what's known as an evaluation function in there. So we're going to look at more at heuristics later on. But this one builds a heuristic inside the algorithm itself, as opposed to, and it's actually quite effective. So we have what's known as the min conflict heuristic of minimize. So what does this do? It minimizes the number of unsatisfied clauses. Remember, we're trying to satisfy the original sentence, right? So what you want to do is to minimize the number of unsatisfied ones because you want to be able to satisfy all of them, right? And the problem is in this one is that the heuristic itself has to find the right balance between greediness, where it tries to do a lot of, you know, and where it tries to be very greedy, and we'll say this, and randomness, how it's trying to do things randomly. So greediness means you assign something and you move on from there, assuming that it's correct, right? Whereas randomness means you don't quite know and you pick something. So let's go through this walksat algorithm. It's actually fairly easy to understand, right? So you have a number of clauses. There you have the clauses you want to show. So it's in CNF already. And it's going to return a satisfying model or failure. That's why it's incomplete. It is not going to tell you yes or no necessarily. It's either going to tell you yes, but if it fails, it could be true, it could be false, it just happened to fail. That's why that's the incompleteness. It's not going to tell you yes, no. It could tell you yes, but if it tells you that it failed, you can't be sure whether it's, you can't tell whether it's true or false, whether it is satisfied, it is possible to satisfy this or not. So the closer set of clauses in proportional logic, again, so CNF. P is some probability, right? So of course this is, here I'm assuming there's a way of doing this, right? The probability of choosing to do a random walk move. Well, one thing could be just 0.5, 0.5, for instance, right? And max flips is the number of flips allowed before you actually give up, right? So the way it starts, this one is quite interesting, right? So you have your model, so you're just going to say, okay, let's just do a random assignment of true, false to the symbols in clauses. So we're just going to have all our list of symbols. We're just going to randomly assign them true and false according to some distribution usually, right? So this is where, of course, here this is also, if we want to go from this idea of like that it's quite abstract, a random assignment, usually you need to do this according to some distribution, right? So, you know, whatever. It could be like just a uniform distribution. Or you know about distribution and stuff like that, right? Probability distribution, roughly. Anyway, so, okay, we have a random assignment. You know, flip a coin and decide what to make each, right? For instance, that's enough, that's good enough. You know, head it's true, tails it's false, right? And for I to one, from one to max flips, so here's another parameter. What is max flips? You need to look at the problem that you're looking at and decide, you know, how many flips I'm going to allow, right? Do. Okay, if it happens that the model satisfies the clauses, I'm done, right? It'd be quite unlikely that just right at the beginning, well, it could happen, right? So you find a model that satisfies the clause, you return. Otherwise, you keep going. So what do? You pick a random clause from the list of clauses that is false in the model. Obviously, if it's true, you're done with that one, right? So you pick something that is true in the model, that is false in the model, right? And you're going to try and make it true, right? So pick something which is false in the model, right? With some probability P, flip the value in model of a randomly selected symbol. So you pick something randomly that is false. Out of all the false clauses, you pick one randomly out of there, according to some distribution. Now in the so now you pick one of the symbols that occur in the clause and you flip its value in the model. If it used to be true, you make it false. If it used to be false, you make it true, basically. Well, with some probability, it may not happen, right? So 0.5 or whatever, you know, if you decide with probability 0 you're going to do this, this means you're never going to flip anything. If you decide it's going to be probability 1, you always flip, right? So that's the thing, you need to decide what the probability is. So you say, with probability 1, flip the value in model of a randomly selected symbol, means always flip. One is not that useful, by the way, obviously. Else, what do? You flip whichever symbol in clause, so this is the mean conflict, maximizes the number of satisfied clauses. Else, this one is the greedy bit, right? So what you do, you flip, so this is the random bit, this is the greedy bit there. Because you're going to say, okay, I'm going to pick the symbol in clause that maximizes the number of satisfied clauses, right? Because you're hoping by doing this, you have fewer unsatisfied one left that you can try and satisfy next time round. But that doesn't guarantee the fact that you've done this, doesn't guarantee that it has to be the case, right? So it may not work, right? And you keep doing this until you reach max flip. Hopefully you've been able to return a model in the meantime. Otherwise, you fail, right? Yeah. Which one? Here. Yeah.
Corresponds to which?
To this. To this one. It corresponds to the weave. You do this with probability P. If you didn't flip anything, because then you do this one. So this is the bit between these two. Yeah. It corresponds to this one, yeah. I know, it's a bit weird, isn't it? Wave and then else. Yeah. It's a new construct. I guess this is what happens when you have probabilistic kind of algorithms. So what does it do? The algorithm basically checks for satisfiability by randomly flipping the values of variables. So basically it starts flipping all over the place. That's how it does. And you would think, how can this work? Actually it does. And it actually does better than DPLL in many cases. So just to give you an idea, right? So random free CNF. So if, for instance, if you construct these random sentences with just free literals per clause, right? So here's an example here. And M is the number of clauses and N is the number of symbols. It has been found. So this is an empirical result, right? When people have done looking at this, they found that the hard problems seem to cluster near the ratio M divided by N. So the number of clauses divided by the number of symbols is equal to 4.3. This is known as a critical point, right? So I'm just giving you some example for free CNF. And here, a graph there. So what happens is that the probability of it being satisfiable, certainly, you know, it's all pretty nice when you're there under this. And then suddenly things drop drastically when you reach 4.3, right, in terms of the things being satisfiable. Problems get much harder, right? You're not meant to memorize this graph, by the way, right? No, I want you to be able to reproduce this graph up to that little point there. So, but you need to know about the notion of a critical point. And what we see, right, so if we look at this hard satisfiability problem, one particular example here, that's from the book. If you look at this. So this is DPLL. And this is the graph for WorkSat. So WorkSat actually does much better. So in terms of runtime, right? For so we know these are satisfiable problems, right? Free CNF, we know it's hard, and we know that the hard bit is around 4.3. And look at the runtime suddenly. So works out actually does much better on this, you know, if you look at a particular sample generally of free CNF problems, randomly generated satisfiable one, well, 100 of them, than DPLL. So which is quite interesting, right? Given that you have so much, it's so random, you have, you know, randomness and basically random works in there, that it actually does, it can do much better, right? So this graph you need to be able to reproduce, right? All the way up to everything there. No, so you don't need to be able to do this graph either, obviously. So, but you need to be able to at least remember the general idea there, right? So, because this graph is not the same for all problems anyway. So, okay? Any questions about this? No? Almost done. So, this is all very good. What do we do with all this? Now we can move back to our Wompus world. But we're going to move, you know, there's a scary slide there. But don't worry, you know. So remember now, our Wompus world, so what we can do, if we're still working proportional logic, we need to write a sentence for each, characterizing what's going on for each of the squares, right? Remember, because we don't have any variables, right? So for instance, no pit in 1, 1, no Wompus in 1, 1, et cetera, right? And there are 64 proportion symbols, right? That's pretty bad. Imagine having to do a truth table for this. Well, no, you. Could you? And 155 sentences. So if you had to do this by truth table enumeration, there's no hope, right? So if we go through this, these are all the things there. And but what's nice about this is that we can actually use what we have so far. Well, actually, it's not entirely true. We need to use search as well. You haven't seen that yet. But we, it is possible to write a particular agent that would at least use, for instance, Davis-Putnam or Worksat in it, right? And this is the bit where it would use it, would be the bit where you need to ask it about particular bits. So this is our little agent there. You know, for instance, what you're trying to do in this case, you're trying to find a goal, right? So you can go for this, your KB, the count, etc. And you, what it does to try to do is to build a plan. You haven't looked at plan, but the plan is telling it what to do step by step to go find a goal and then get out of the grid, right? So for instance, you could try and find a goal first. You know, it's in increasing order of difficulty, things you want to do. So you found the plan, you found something, there's glitter, for instance, then what you want to do is to grab it and then plan the route to get out of there safely, for instance, and climb out of the cave, right? But otherwise, if there's no goal and there's no plan yet, what you want to do is to basically find the nearest safe square or grid on the square on the grid. So that's what this is doing here. And this plan route here is going to be something we're going to look at later on. So, right. So I'm just going to mention it. So the plan route thing, for instance, like where you have a current goal, you have the agent's current position, a number of goals, and you have the allowed moves, right, or the allowed squares. And we're going to look at this, for instance, like A-star graph search, which is very interesting. So we're going to look at this soon. So don't worry too much. So some of it involves search there, and it's in there. But the interesting part of the interesting thing is this. Wherever you have ask, there instance, for instance, so the way this would be implemented, for instance, if you're using a proportional specification for the problem, would be using, for instance, the DPLL there to get it to tell you this, right? Because it's saying, I want to know whether this is false or true possibly. Right, so in this case, it's unsatisfiable. So I want to show that. So there I would use some kind of either Worksat, for instance, or DPLL. And it's the same here as well. So the next step would be, you know, to look at, you know, can I find somewhere, is it possible for me to show that it's unprovable that there is no Wompus? So then I can try and shoot the arrow to make the square safe, et cetera, et cetera. So what should I say about this? Do you need to... No, you're not going to be asked to reproduce this. Yeah. Well, you may be asked to give some idea about how you might go about solving it, but you're not going to be asked to basically be able to memorize this. It's too cruel. Let's move quickly. So I've already mentioned this. So, but this is not it, right? This is not all. So there's, I'm actually projecting a bit towards some of the, like this one projects more towards the, more or less the final lecture in my part. Right, it's not enough just to have the rules of physics of the Wompus world, right? So actually, we need more stuff. So we actually need more. So that's why you have so many sentences. One of these are to do with what's known as effect axioms, and these used to be a big problem in AI. You have what's known as frame problems, so frame axioms and things such as effect axioms. So what this says is that if, right? The location is 1-1 at time step 0, and I'm facing, and the agent is facing east at that time, and then it moves forward, right? You need to also specify that it's now at location 2-1, okay? But not just this, you need to also say it's no longer where it used to be. And this is interesting because actually these are also things that need to be added, because otherwise the system doesn't know anymore that it's no longer at 1-1, right? This is known as an effect axiom. So we need these extra axioms about the world. Even though they seem obvious to us, if we look at it, if you move from 1-1 to 2-1, surely you're not at 1-1 anymore. But how does the system know this? You actually have to write something about this. And this is what makes things really annoying and complicated. And it's not just this. The other one is known as the frame problem. It's a very famous kind of thing. I mean, that used to be a big problem for reasoners that they had implemented in the 80s and all this, in terms of trying to figure out, you know, they couldn't solve many problems because, you know, the system didn't know that if you, you know, if I take this and move it, if I take this pen and move it from there to there, nothing else has changed, right? That's known as the frame. It's like everything around it. Moving this from there to there doesn't move my laptop, for instance, right? And this had to be told. So for instance, one day if you move forward at time t and it had the arrow at time t, it still has the arrow at time t plus 1, right? Seems obvious. But you need this to be able to do some reasoning and to be able to reason. We'll see this later on. And also, if the Wumpus was alive at time t and the agent moved forward, it's still alive at time t plus 1 because it didn't shoot any arrow, right?